Welcome to Popcorn for Breakfast, where we use normal words and we watch normal movies. Today we'll be discussing Cam's spoiler-free review of Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire, and we'll see if he can convince me to see it too.
Breakfast, presented by St. Louis Area Smoothie Kings. Now, here are your hosts, Cam and Kirk.
I said, Bustin' makes me feel good. You see that? I mixed it with the...
Yeah, that was good. You were like, yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, the outro music, the key of the music, but not blasting everyone's ears out.
You are a musical savant, Kirk.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tip my cap to you.
You can.
But not actually, because my headphones will fall off. So I'll just metaphorically tip my cap.
I understand.
To you.
Let me see it. Go ahead. Oh, that was the most
beautiful.
I just
tipped my head.
He literally tipped his head with his cap. So yes, he lied. We'll see if your headphones fall off later. Welcome, movie lovers. Welcome, non-movie lovers. We're glad you're here as well. If you clicked on this, if you found us by any chance, you must be a Popcorn for Breakfast lover, a Ghostbusters lover, one of our family members who we've coaxed to watching and listening.
Forced,
to,
actually.
Yes, get forced. Us more viewership, so turn it on.
They're
over.
In a closet off screen. We won't let them out until they like and subscribe.
That's their homework. There's a cage. You ever seen the movie?
Shut up.
You ever seen that 90s movie called House Arrest with like Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's
wow,
a good
Jennifer
one right
Love Hewitt.
I think Jamie Lee Curtis is in that film as well. I think she's the mom.
Is she the mom?
We're going to find out
we
later.
We do need to find out.
So stay tuned till the end of the episode. We'll try to tell you by the end of it. But today's episode is a little bit different. Today we'll be reviewing Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire. That's right. This just released. It is the sequel to the sequel of the reboot of the franchise, if that makes
sense. Clear as mud. The sequel to the requel.
The sequel to the requel. And due to a series of, let's call them surgical complications, I was not able to attend tonight's event. I'm not able to sit in a movie theater seat for a very long time. You can draw your own conclusions. And what I told Cam, I said, let's have you go to the movie and I'll interview you about it.
Yes. This is weird.
It's a little bit different,
but
right?
I like it.
So I drove to the theater. I drove him to the theater. I shoved him out of the car,
yeah,
and he had to walk home. So we're recording this pretty much immediately after he's seen the movie.
You're going to have to watch out, Kirk. I feel a lot of power right now. I feel like I get to impose my will upon all of our unsuspecting viewers and listeners right now. And you have no say in the matter. Oh. I just get to expound upon my thoughts on this movie, and you can't say anything because you can't even have an opinion on it.
But there's a catch.
Oh.
There's a catch. You have to persuade me to either see this movie or not see this movie. The listeners, they have to make their own decisions. But for me, I need you to convince me, like, you need, like, the moment you get a free chance, the kids are asleep. This is how you talk, by the way.
Yeah.
And I need you to go see this movie.
That's exactly what I sound like.
Or not see this movie. Just like that.
I'll just use the Bene Gesserit voice on you. See the movie. Is that close? Am I getting
that's
there?
That's okay. Exactly right. I just saw a quick other tangent. I just saw a video where someone asked Rebecca Ferguson on a podcast or an interview saying, who is the voice? And she like started texting someone. I don't know. If
yeah,
she
texted Denis Villeneuve. Was it Denis? Yeah, she did.
She guessed. She's like, is it Kathleen Turner? I don't know.
Great guess.
Kathleen Turner of Serial Mom fame, if you haven't seen that movie. You know, proceed with caution. Go look up the content, but it's fantastic. It's such a crazy movie. So, Cam, again, the mission to convince me, I've got my popcorn snacks, because, I didn't get to the movie theater, so I've got my popcorn.
Now you're a spectator of my review.
I've got my Nerds gummy clusters, so I'm going to mute my microphone and just enjoy. You're my movie tonight, is what this comes
down to. That's great. This is a totally new dynamic change, and I'm here for it.
Excellent.
Let's see how it goes.
So I want to hear the synopsis of this film, and then we'll get into the awards, and I've got a whole bunch of questions for you.
Great. Yeah, so this is a sequel. To the requel, as we said before. So it will be a spoiler-free review, unless you're considering Ghostbusters Afterlife spoilers, which this will really be the only major time that you get those. So I think, you know, obviously the predecessor has to be on the table when we're discussing the sequel. So following the events of Ghostbusters Afterlife, our new Ghostbusters team consisting of Carrie Coon, Paul Rudd, Finn Wolfhard, and McKenna Grace has relocated to New York, Manhattan, to inhabit the famed fire station headquarters of the Ghostbusters.
Yes.
They have been officially sort of christened by the mayor as the official ghostbusting unit for New York City, and they are going about their daily life when, similar to like a like an Incredibles or Batman versus Superman situation,
okay,
they do a bit too much damage to the city in the process of catching ghosts.
Got it.
And the mayor, who is actually a character from the first Ghostbusters movie, is on to them, and he starts restricting their access, mostly McKenna Grace, because she is a minor, and so that's kind of the start of this whole thing.
Interesting.
And they, as that's all happening, there start to be some weirdness with their ghost containment unit. You'll remember from the first movie, there's like that big ghost. You empty the ghost catchers into the big ghost vault.
Yes.
And the ghost vault is malfunctioning.
Oh, wait. Is that from the Afterlife?
No, that's from the first Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that they went that far into the lore.
Oh, yeah. Very far into the lore. Very far into the lore. So they've got McKenna Grace has been sort of sidelined. Her character's name is Phoebe. By this mayor character. And then back home, they've got issues where they're running out of, or they're having issues with the ghost containment system. So that's kind of the catalyst for all this.
Oh, very nice. Now in Frozen Empire, is the mayor, was he the mayor in Ghostbusters 1? Cause that's like a term.
No,
violation.
He was like I can't remember his exact,
like a citizen of some sort.
No, he was like the hardo that like tries to bust them for, he like tries to shut down their whole operation. I can't remember what exactly his like title and things are.
So he's not a policeman, but maybe he's like a state.
He's
representative.
He's like an EPA,
An alderman, a city alderman.
I think he's like an environmental protection agency guy. I don't exactly remember, but it's something like that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So I think we have just enough information to see what happens next. So
and the Frozen Empire piece comes from something that I don't want to talk too much about, but it is sort of like the big. The big bad is related to the Frozen piece, but to go into it too much would kind of ruin like the intro to the movie and then some more details. But
perfect.
So I'm trying to keep it as spoiler free as possible.
All right, we'll try again. You got to convince me. So far, I'm not convinced. I'm gonna say that
right
now.
Fine.
I'm not
That's
convinced.
Fine.
And good luck to you, because I don't know. All right, let's start with who you're going to give your best actor nomination to.
Yes,
and the Oscar goes to.
I'm really excited that I get to talk about this, because this is a performer and actor who I think is really talented and on the brink of doing big things in this industry.
Yeah, Paul Rudd. He's very
dang
close.
Dang it, Kirk. I was trying to bury the lead there. No. McKenna Grace. McKenna Grace, who plays Phoebe in this film. She's a younger actor, and she really hasn't had a breakout performance outside of Ghostbusters Afterlife. She's been doing tons of like voice work. You might recognize her as Skye from the Paw Patrol movies.
Oh my gosh.
Shout out any other parents out there who took their kids to go see Paw Patrol.
Shout out single 28-year-old.
So she does a lot of voice roles. She does a few smaller roles. Ghostbusters Afterlife was really her first big tentpole role, and I thought she was fabulous in that movie. I think she really embodies this character of Phoebe, not because her personality in real life is the same, so it's not just that she was typecast. It's just that she has a really deep understanding of this character.
Interesting.
Just a really thorough knowledge, to the point where she crosses that line that all actors should cross, where she knows exactly. She's not even thinking about her reactions, because she has become the character. She knows exactly how they're going to react. And as Phoebe Spangler, she just is in a different stage of life in this movie. So this takes place 3 years after the original, just like this movie is releasing 3 years after Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Wow.
So she is older. She's not a kid anymore. She's 15 in this movie. And it's sort of a coming of age story for her. And so some of the quirks that worked for her performance in the first movie that could carry her through, just like her overall nerdiness and like innocence and things like that, she can't use all of those same things. She has to grow her character, and she does so beautifully. I really think she's very gifted, and I think I can't wait to see her in more things because I feel like she has such a professional approach to the way she goes about handling this character and really is the heart and soul of this new revitalized franchise they've got here.
That's so great. That's so great. I'm seeing that she was like a TV hopper for a long time.
Yep.
Then she was in the critically acclaimed Independence Day 2, Independence Day Resurgence.
Yes, and, of course.
She's in a movie with Chris Evans, Gifted. You know that
yeah,
was
Gifted.
A,
mm-hmm.
a big movie. I didn't see it yet, but I will. I, Tanya? Holy cow.
Yeah, she played young Tanya.
Yes.
Yeah, so she's had a few roles.
Oh, she was young Brie Larson in Captain Marvel as well.
She's almost on the Ariana Greenblatt path to success.
Oh,
like
playing
young versions of big characters and like waiting for a big breakout, and they're both kind of blossoming at the same time into full-fledged serious actors. And I think McKenna Grace has potential to do really big things in this industry.
That's fantastic. Now, does she play someone, like does she play Paul Rudd's daughter in this?
No. Okay. So Paul Rudd was her summer school teacher in the first movie.
Interesting. Okay.
Who becomes romantically entangled with her mom, who is a single mother. And in this film, that relationship has changed a little bit. Paul Rudd's still around, so it's a little bit more of like a stepfather dynamic going on here.
Okay.
But her connection to the Ghostbusters lore dating back to Ghostbusters Afterlife is that she is Egon Spengler, the nerdy guy with the big glasses from the original Ghostbusters.
Is that Harold?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Harold Ramis.
She is Harold Ramis's granddaughter.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yep.
That's fantastic. I thought you were going to say it was Slimo's granddaughter. Like
Slimer, yeah. Yeah. Some, as it turns out, his great, great, great Slimer's from the early 1600s, actually.
Yes.
No.
Somehow, actually, she can like morph in and out of that form.
Yes, that's her power.
That's why she's like
now
evolved.
You're spoiling the movie.
Oh, no. My goodness. Okay, so let's move on before I spoil more. How about your scene stealer? Who stole the scenes?
I'm excited about this one, too, because it's Kumail Nanjiani.
Yes.
Who I just really love. And one of those guys where when you see the cast list for a sequel, you're always like, oh, who are they going to add to this world?
Who are they going to add?
No. Terrible. I was waiting for the first Ray Parker reference, though you already did do the bust and makes me feel good.
Who are they going to call? Kumail Nanjiani.
Kumail Nanjiani is, I mean, you know this. He is really a gifted comedic actor and has really established himself as just a surefire scene stealer. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that it's this category because this is what he does. And I think that he has this innate ability to just really understand the tone of the film that he's in. And he was working overtime in Marvel Studios, The Eternals, or I think it was just called Eternals by the time it got released. They dropped the like the social network, like the Facebook. And that was tough because that movie was heavy, heavy, dense, dense, dense. And he was like one of the only comedic valves for that. And so at times it felt a little bit forced there, but he was still very good. In this movie, it is a movie that skews towards comedy because it's Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. But he cranks it up to the next level. He just, I don't know what it is, man. Some people just have it. He just understands comedy and he understands exactly the angle that he needs to take on his delivery to create optimum, maximum laughing. And he was hilarious in this movie. And I think he's a perfect fit in this new world that they've got. His character is a really interesting one, so I won't go into it too much. I think people who see the movie will just have a lot of fun with that. But there are many scenes that he saves, and there are every scene that he's in, he steals. So he's a true scene stealer and a great addition to this world.
Do you feel like are the archetypes of the original Ghostbusters? that's the B movie parody. Ghostbusters.
Yeah, Ghostbusters. Yeah.
In the original Ghostbusters, are there archetypes that they replicate in Afterlife and even in this? Like, is Paul Rudd Dan Aykroyd? Is Kumail? Is he Bill Murray? Like, are there any connections that you can draw at all?
Not really, other than that Phoebe is meant to be like, you know, Egon Spengler again. Like,
okay.
Like, yep. She is the genius. She is the one with the one from her family who has the clearest ties to him. Mm-hmm. But it's as if like, what would it be like if he was the main character and was a little bit more charismatic and a little more involved than he was in the first movie? So there's that. But other than that, and the other thing is, and I know that people who have seen Afterlife will know this too, those other guys are still around. Like Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, like they're around. Dan Aykroyd is heavily involved in both Afterlife and this film. So it's like you can't really replace those archetypes because they're still around.
Can you spoil one thing for me if it's true? I got to know this because in the Christina Ricci, Bill Pullman, Casper, the classic.
Oh my, yes.
At one point in that movie, Dan Aykroyd runs out of the house as his character from Ghostbusters, as he's trying to exterminate the ghosts in the house. And he fails. He runs away. He's like, get out of here. It's not safe or something. Is there any Casper crossover with this film?
Most ambitious crossover of the 1990s. No.
Okay, cool.
So if you were hoping for that, I sincerely apologize. But I guess it's better you know now than waiting the whole hour and 55-minute runtime.
Someone's in there like, it's the only reason I bought this ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that would have been fantastic. Missed opportunity. Well, hopefully they'll end it with a full trilogy treatment, a full requel sequel trilogy treatment.
Yes.
And we can have Dan Aykroyd do that scene. I would love that. So next up, let's talk about the showstopper, the thing that literally stopped you in the back final seat, available seat in the theater that you went to.
Yes, I was in the far back left corner. It's worth noting, I guess, the format that I saw this movie in was IMAX. So I did get the full cinematic experience for this. It was mixed in IMAX. So it was good to see it in that format. I think for me, the big thing that has really stuck out both about Afterlife and this film, there's sort of two showstoppers for me. The first one that applies to both Afterlife and this one is the visual aesthetic. I really feel like when Jason Reitman, you know this because you've worked in the brand world before and you've worked for agencies and things like that. Mm-hmm. You develop like this thing called like a lookbook whenever you're working on a brand or a comms playbook or something like that, where you say, this is how we talk about this brand. Well, whenever they do films and they do franchises, a lot of times the person who starts it establishes those rules, whether they are intentionally doing it or not, because they create the new world. Well, Jason Reitman, who I think is a fantastic filmmaker, really good writer, wrote Juno, wrote Up in the Air, directed Juno, directed Ghostbusters Afterlife, really quality filmmaker, son of Ivan Reitman, who made the first Ghostbusters movie. He did Afterlife, and he's very heavily involved in this one. Executive producer, writer on the film. But Gil Keenan is the one directing this movie. Mm-hmm. The visual aesthetic is so necessary for this franchise. Because you go back and watch that original Ghostbusters, or either of the first two, movies like that just don't exist anymore.
No.
You know, like, something that is aesthetically comparable, even if it's scaled up to modern standards with that, just wouldn't work, you know. It's just a very like campy, fully comedy. Like it's not a very cinematic thing.
The word that comes to mind is like dusty. Like,
yeah.
Like not that there's literally dust everywhere, but it looks just dirty. Like you just want to clean everyone.
and the production design is like very very much like sound stages and big set pieces and like, you know, campy. It's a comedy film. They didn't go hard on the cinematic front. But I think the thing that has helped with Afterlife and this film is that it's very much a cinematic experience. Like, they've really keyed in on, like, how can we bring this forward and make it a modern-day blockbuster cinematic tentpole? And Jason Reitman did a fabulous job of that in the first movie, and Gil Keenan keeps that going in this one. So I think that's a huge benefit to it. And what I really like about it is there's a good amount of restraint there, too. Because the first movies are so goofy and campy, and they're using these, like, really, like, 80s practical effects with puppets and things like that, like, they could really take advantage of that and be like, well, it's aesthetically on par. We made it goofy. And they only do it sparingly. They could lean hard into it and it would, in my opinion, ruin everything. But they make a concerted effort to make the special effects look good, but also at times bring in that campiness and bring in that old Ghostbusters. So it's a good amount of self-discipline.
Is it when McKenna Grace turns into Slimer? Like when she's
when she uses her Slimer abilities? Cool. Yes, definitely.
That's a good call. It's a good creative moment to do that. Yeah.
But I think like a lesser director, a lesser creative team would really abuse that.
Yeah.
You know, and just be like, let's lean into the full camp. Mm-hmm. I would like to see that just to be like, what does that even look like? But I'm glad that they don't. The second thing that's a showstopper is there are some really good actual horror set pieces in this. Ooh. So Gil Keenan has more of a horror background than Jason Reitman. And one of the things that's kind of the secret sauce of that original Ghostbusters movie is there are some good scares. Like,
oh yeah,
some pretty solid like horror set pieces. And this movie is very similar where there are throughout, sometimes when you least expect it, good horror set pieces that sneak up on you and make your heart thump a little bit and make you feel like, oh yeah, remember, this is ghosts. This is the afterlife. This is like creepy, spooky stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was missing in Afterlife, where you never really felt like the fear, the dread,
the danger.
And this one, it's very much present. So I give them kudos for that.
What, so at the IMAX theater, you were in the last seat. Were they like single seat? Was it a single seat or was it like a joined couple seat?
No, it was a single. It was a single. Okay. Yeah.
Right. I was hoping that you got scared and like either
we had double armrests in between us. So yeah.
Gotcha. I really wanted to like you to get like horrified and either
grab a stranger,
grab a stranger, or they jump into your arms.
Yeah. Like Scooby and Shaggy. Exactly. Yeah. I wish, but no, it did not happen that way.
Well, let's talk about director's shoes then. I want to know how you would beat this director, Gil. You'd grab him by the collar and you'd rip off his glasses and you'd get 2 inches from his eyes and you said, "You did this wrong, Gil."
Yeah.
With that intensity too.
Yes.
I believe you. I totally
sure
believe
I can capture
you.
It. I think for me.
Here, grab my shirt. Pretend I'm Gil.
No, I won't. It's the script. The script struggles. Like, there is a lot of franchise baggage here, which you wouldn't think, right? Because, like, it's not that big of a franchise. Right. It's not like Scream 7, where it's like, okay, now we have to tie back in all of these old things, which is definitely felt in Scream, you know, and it's felt in these other long franchises. But here it's like, you've got Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. You've got Ghostbusters 2, which is mostly ignored in general. And then you've got Afterlife, and you've got this. And there's a bunch of other stuff that's not canon, but that's like that's the core, to use a Scream reference, the core four. Mm-hmm. But they've made the mistake along the way of, I think Afterlife really laid the groundwork for this, of just adding too many characters and adding and not closing anything off, you know? So you've got the original, like, Ghostbusters guys there, minus Harold Ramis, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. But you've also added Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon. You've added Finn Wolfhard. You've added McKenna Grace. You've added two other extraneous characters. Plus, you're adding Kumail Nanjiani, Patton Oswalt, like, more and more and more and more in this film. And it just is too much. It's mm-hmm. and you fall into what happens whenever you don't show restraint with the character and world building, which is you get plot holes, you get continuity issues, you get a really busy film with a ton of subplots, many of which you don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
And even with that, the whole thing is paced like Afterlife. One of my big criticisms of Afterlife too, it's paced so slowly because...
Oh.
Which is counterintuitive, because you would think if it's really busy with all these different subplots that you're just moving too much.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, I can't keep up. But what happens is, because it's so tied back to the lore, which, let's be honest with ourselves, the lore of Ghostbusters is like shallow. You know what I mean?
There's a marshmallow man in the first one.
There are ghosts. Here's the proton thing that we shoot them with. Here's the VCR or the Sony camcorder thing that we catch them in, right? Like, that's it. But in Afterlife, they paid so much reverence to the lore and like got into it. And so they had to sort of keep that up here. So you've got all of this baggage. And because of that lore, you have to explain everything ad nauseum.
Right, because it's not It's not like if they made a Titanic 2, right? Like, okay, we know like everything that happened. The boat sank, the iceberg, Jack and Rose, like, right? So you have to really like hit it home. Like, this is what happened.
Exactly.
Without flashbacks.
Without flashbacks, and you're building the lore as you go because you have to tie it back. Like, how does this make sense?
Yeah.
So if it really feels like almost every line of dialogue is like exposition, explaining to the audience why they're doing what they're doing, which is just like a drag.
Move on. Yeah. I feel like with the overcrowding of characters and world building, I feel like, you know, writers should consider it like a group of friends.
Yes.
Like, who do you actually want to hang out with? Would you want to have this character in this room, or would you lie to him and avoid at all costs? Say, oh, we're going to the pool, and then you go to Chili's, right? Like, you just figure out a way to get that character out of there.
Yes.
Don't even put him in the room at all.
Even if there's a bit of bad writing, just for a sec.
Yep.
To just like chop that line and get them out of there, because there are characters popping up in this movie that I'm like, they're back. Like, what are we doing here? Like, now I have to try to care about that person.
Yeah.
There are so many nothing characters in this movie. And sometimes a subplot will start in the first 30 minutes of the movie and you don't hear anything about it again until like 2 hours, like what feels like 2 hours later.
That's rough.
It's bad writing. It's a bad script. And I expected more from them. I was really hoping they would do more with it.
Okay, that's sad. All right, now we're going to move on to final thoughts on score.
Yes.
But I want you to tell me all your final thoughts and say everything up to my score for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is, and then stop right there.
You want me to, okay, my score for Ghost, okay, got it.
Yes. And then I will tell you if I will or will not see the movie. And then reveal your score.
Okay, okay.
And then I have a whole bunch of other silly questions to talk about about this movie.
Yeah, I feel a lot of pressure now. But
okay, convince me.
With regard to
eye contact with me.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I think if you're a Ghostbusters fan and you loved Afterlife, you're going to find a lot to love in this movie. I think that it's designed to be a crowd-pleasing movie. It is a bona fide blockbuster tentpole film. It looks like a big cinematic experience. It feels like a big cinematic experience. It feels like a summer blockbuster, even though it's March. And it is designed to be a crowd-pleaser, so there are moments that you will really like. That said, outside of McKenna Grace, Kumail Nanjiani, there's a lot of nothing performances and nothing characters. They continue to make Carrie Coon's character completely unlikable and unredeemable in every single way. And nobody can convince me otherwise. And I really like Carrie Coon. Her character, I don't understand how we're supposed to like her. I really don't. Like, there's nothing good about this character. Nothing at all. I don't understand how her kids like her. I don't understand how Paul Rudd likes her. It makes no sense to me. She's terrible. Paul Rudd, they, for the second movie in a row, have just relegated him to a comedy, one of those wind-up monkeys with the cymbals.
Yes.
And he's a gifted actor for a movie like this. Like, he understands how to bring heart and emotion and all of these different things that they could really use in this movie. And he's got to be one of the highest paid actors in this film, if not the highest paid actor.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's one of the oldest people alive. He's like 877 years old.
Right.
With perfect, he's a vampire, right?
So the fact that he's just like mostly sidelined for both this and Afterlife, with the exception of like telling some jokes and playing a bit part, is very odd to me. Finn Wolfhard's character, I mean, he could have even not even been here and I wouldn't have even known. It's crazy. So there's a lot of nothing character, not a lot of nothing performances. The plot is a mess. But it looks good. It feels like a Ghostbusters movie. It feels like, you know, I kind of prefer this new direction that they're going in versus like a continuation of the first movie. But it's got too much franchise baggage. I really wanted this movie to stick out and say, like, I'm blazing my own path. We deserve to see more Ghostbuster stories, and here's how good they can be. And it didn't really do that.
Okay.
So as harsh as that all sounds,
careful,
I'm not going to say it. My score for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is...
Okay. I've listened to your arguments, and I appreciate your insights, Cam.
Thank you.
I appreciate you not going to, as we like to do here, you know, we don't want to get too crazy or use pompous words.
Right.
You had great alliteration, great diction throughout your entire review and account of this movie.
Thank you.
I will say, based on that review, I will watch this movie on streaming. I don't think I'll rush to the theaters, but I will enjoy a night in with my popcorn and with my Nerds gummy clusters. They're the best.
No free ads.
No free ads. Just bleep that. Blur the actual candy bag. I'll see this, but I'll see it on streaming.
Okay.
What's your final score here?
6.0.
Hey!
This is a 6. This is a flat 6. Is it enjoyable? For sure. I'm not going to continue asking myself questions that I can answer. I do that too much.
Is this enjoyable? Yes.
Did I have a good time?
30 sure. minutes. Cam often takes himself on his own date.
Yeah. Because I have to ask myself questions in order to unearth the truth. Otherwise, I don't know.
Do you like long walks on the beach? I think I would.
It is an enjoyable film that if you look too closely, it starts to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're a Ghostbusters fan, you have nothing to worry about. You're going to be like, great, another fun ride in a world that I love.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call myself a Ghostbusters fan per se. I wouldn't call myself a Ghostbusters fan, period. But it's fine. It's a fine movie. It's a 6.0 flat.
Great.
Yeah.
I love it. Here's my random questions that I wrote down earlier. Did you remember to bring this is about your movie experience.
Oh, sure.
Did you remember to bring your popcorn, but your refillable popcorn bucket?
I did.
Fantastic.
Yes. So
$5, butter, salt, the whole
I had works. Yeah, very good.
That's fantastic. Are there any cameos in this film that you can't tell us about, but are there any cameos you're like, huh, that was nice to see? Or did John Cena show up and you're like, get out of this movie?
No, there are a few Ghostbusters-related cameos that are good. I mean, I mentioned the ones like in the very early part.
Mm-hmm.
But no, there are others. Yes, there are cameos that are enjoyable.
Okay. Next question. Do you prefer Slimer over Casper, the friendly ghost?
In what way?
Cage match. Who do you want to win?
Well, Slimer. He's got the weight advantage for sure. Casper's too kind of spirit.
No, obviously. like a long-term friend. Like you had to see this ghost every single day.
I like Slimer's vibe.
Yeah.
I dig Slimer's vibe. He's just kind of self-serving. He's kind of like me, just a self-serving jerk. No, I do like Slimer. That Casper movie has aged like milk. I'm not sure it was ever good. So any 90s nostalgia freaks, please plug your ears. It was
How dare you? I'm right here. I love that movie.
But Slimer kind of rocks. I mean, it's just kind of like those big fat ghosts in Casper that eat all the junk.
The uncles.
Yeah.
They have names, Cam.
Excuse me.
Ivan Fatso and Stinky. Come on.
It's like Fatso. Slimer's like that, and I dig Slimer's vibe for sure.
Would Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, would the story be strong enough to carry in an audience if Paul Rudd was not in this film?
Yeah, I think so. I think to me, whenever you see the first movie, whenever you see Afterlife, McKenna Grace is who really grabs you.
Okay.
And you feel compelled by her. I was so impressed with her in that first movie. A little less so in this movie, but just because the writing's not as good for her character, in my opinion, but I think she does a really good job as this character.
That's fantastic. And were there any audience distractions or funny moments or I can't believe that person is a human moments as part of your movie experience?
There were. So just to give you a glimpse behind the curtain, I saw this at a press screening that also included Sony VIPs. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Just fully transparent. So I'm seeing it with the press and also a room full of people that I don't know how they got there or what they're doing there. And some of those people freaking loved it. Like fist pumping, like crowd participation, yelling out things, they're fired up. So
yeah,
at times I was like, oh, okay, that's a choice. But you know, maybe they're Sony VIPs because they just freaking love Ghostbusters and they are like Ghostbusters. And if so, I'm thrilled for them because they got to see it early and they seem to be having just a magnificent time. So kudos to them.
That's fantastic. Real quick before we talk about anything else, I don't want to forget it. And usually at this time of the episode, I forget everything and I start to spiral into our sign off. So I just want to say that we talked about House Arrest, the film House Arrest at the top of this
we
episode.
Did. Wow, that feels like ages ago.
It does. Jamie Lee Curtis is in this film. She plays the mom. I was correct.
2 points for Gryffindor.
Thank you.
Well done.
I am a Gryffindor. I watched that movie so much growing up. If you haven't seen it before, you need to check it out. Here's some other...
it's actively killing me. Yeah. The fact that you said you watched it so much.
Many times. I went to the grocery store, you know, a thing of the past, and rented that
99-cent rentals.
Bingo. Over and over. To the point where my parents are like, should we just buy this? And I said... No.
It steals the magic.
Yes.
Yes. I'm totally with you, dude.
Exactly. I'm looking up exactly where you can stream it right now. I'm hoping that there is somewhere. Yes.
Kirk's parents spent $150 on this film over the course of a year and a half.
So much that I still don't own it as an adult. You can stream it if you have a library streaming access. Like
Hoopla.
Hoopla or any other. I found out there's other ones too.
Oh.
Which is crazy. So if you go a member of your local library, check out if they have a streaming library for movies and music. It's pretty cool. So hopefully you can see it there or buy it. I'm sure it's 99 cents on Apple TV. So also, Kevin Pollak is in that movie. Christopher McDonald, better known as Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore. Jennifer Tilly.
We're still talking about House Arrest?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yes. Okay. I'm just checking.
The next hour is actually reserved to talk about House Arrest.
If you need to take a bathroom break, now's the time.
Hey, well, hold on. They can keep their AirPods in,
yeah,
Cam.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I meant.
Jennifer Tilly and Wallace Shawn, of course, who is of inconceivable fame from The Princess Bride. Wow. So those are the people that's a crazy amount of people in this 90s kids caper, basically.
It is. Thank you for taking us on that journey.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Well, thank you so much, Cam, for convincing me. Yes, I will absolutely go watch this movie on streaming at home when it becomes available. We'll try to keep you posted when that does come out, where there will be any of the 9,000 streaming companies that are out there right now. But tell us what you thought. Did you go see the movie? Are you going to wait now to see it? Or are you excited to see this? Are you a Ghostbuster person? Did you get like an incredible Ghostbusters costume for Halloween 1 year or 10 years in a row? We want to know. Show us pictures. Text it to us. Cam's number is 555. I always want to give out your number.
Yeah, please don't.
Every time.
I appreciate that.
We need a phone line so I can say it like we're on the radio.
We do.
You could all the social media. Cam, what's all of our social media outlets?
You can find them. We're on Facebook, Discord, Twitter, which is now called something else.
X.
Tickety Talk.
MySpace. Zanga.
Truth. Truth Social.
All of those.
But more than social, if you really want to find all things Popcorn for Breakfast, please go to the brand new and improved www.popcornforbreakfast.com. We've got a new site there. You can find all of our social media presences there with the various videos that we post on TikTok, YouTube, etc. You can also find new blog content, which is dropping all the time. Stefano, who has been on this show many times and is a contributor to the podcast, our dear friend, he just published a Problemista review. That movie also releases this weekend from A24. Fabulous review. He's got me really wanting to see that movie.
Yeah.
So go check out that and check out all the other content that we've got on popcornforbreakfast.com.
So much cool stuff is coming this year. We can't wait to talk to you some more about movies, all things normal movies that normal people things say, not the creepy weirdos with the mustaches and the stubble and the little bit of mutton chops. Have you seen these people, Cam? They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
There's definitely those people. They sometimes have a funny little hat.
I've got a tweed jacket.
Sometimes.
Loafers.
Definitely loafers.
It's just as bad as...
Now it sounds like we're being mean. Let's... they deserve it.
We love all of you. Even if you even if you don't love movies and you look like that, we love you too. So please continue to watch, subscribe, like, all the fun things on all of our platforms. We will talk to you soon.
Peace.